and welcome to Best Girl Grip, the podcast that celebrates the women behind the scenes of the British film industry. I'm your host, Nicole Davis.
Hello, pod pals. Welcome to another episode of Best Girl Grip. This past weekend, I was at Sheffield Dock Fest for the first time ever, which was a bloody marvellous festival. There's so much on and so much to see, I barely scratched the surface, but I will give a shout out to two things in their programme, which incidentally I saw at CPH Docks this year, and they are The Hottest August by Brett Story and The Edge of Democracy by Petra Costa. The former is an observational look at Trump's America, asking residents of New York's five boroughs to reflect on their hopes and concerns for the future. It's about climate change, economics, racism, human plight, but in an essayistic, immersive and reflective way, and I really loved it. The second is a personal and political fusion about Brazil's recent history and the tragic rise and fall of Presidents Dilma Rousseff and Lula da Silva. It was a subject I knew very little about, but rather than feeling ignorant or beaten over the head by lots of information, I felt like Petra distilled a very fractious and complicated period of political history through her own personal lens and experience of it, and that for me made it much more accessible and interesting. So keep an eye out for those when they come to UK cinemas. Speaking of festivals, this week is the third episode in the four-part Flatpak Festival special. Flatpak is a really inventive and subversive event that happens in Birmingham every year, screening a whole host of films and art forms that you might not have seen before. And in that vein, I was really chuffed to get to speak to this week's guest, Seema Gonzai, who is an independent film director and producer specialising in screen dance. Screen dance is a movement-based arts form that combines cinematography with choreography in its storytelling. Seema will do a much better job of explaining what that is and how she came to be involved in it than I can. This year at Flatpak, she programmed an event called Merce Cunningham at 100, Innovations in Screen Dance, in which she explored the ongoing conversation between dance, film and digital technology through a brief history of Merce Cunningham, a pioneering contemporary dancer and an early innovator in splicing performance with projected imagery. So I'll admit I was slightly out of my comfort zone for this interview because visual arts is something I know next to nothing about, and I was really asking questions without much understanding of what screen dance was, but it turned out to be really fascinating. We talk a lot about funding, about being an independent filmmaker and what that looks like, as well as how Seema's career changed after she had her daughter, so I really appreciate Seema's honesty there. Finally, I have a bit of a personal plug to tell you about. I'm hosting a Q&A tomorrow night at the Fragments Film Festival at Genesis Cinema. It's the first edition of the festival, which seeks to champion inclusivity, and I'll be interviewing several women filmmakers after a screening of their short films. You can head to the Genesis Cinema website to find out more about the event and the films, and if you're free, I'd love you to come. This is episode 22 of Best Girl Grip.
So I'm going to start really far back. So I'm from Blackburn and I grew up in Blackburn. I don't want to give away my age now, but I grew up in Blackburn in the 70s and through to the 80s. So I was really, really lucky to have media that was then a GCSE module. Wow. That was the first time it had been recognised as something you could study at school level. And I was always quite a creative person. My background is as a dancer. And being Indian, I'm always surrounded by lots of creativity. So the minute film came out, I was like, oh, I'm going to give that a try. And I absolutely loved it. So it was a really great way for me to excel in my studies, really. I studied it at college and then I went straight through to university in Salford and then in Manchester and then finally came to Birmingham to do a master's in visual communication. But I'd say that one of the things for me, I guess I have to put into context that I am Indian and from up north with very traditional parents, that studying something that I was going to excel in was always the career path that I had to take. And so film, luckily, was something I could demonstrate was a career that was going to be fruitful and successful because when you're from a background such as mine, it's usually being a doctor or an accountant or a dentist or any of those things. So I did as much studying as I could to I guess, have the permission to have it as a career. And that comes from first family before you start to think of any other, you know, what sort of genre you're going to get in or what sort of industry level you're going to get in. I think the first thing for me was, you know, having proven myself to my cultural background, really. So since doing that throughout all of these university courses, I wasn't really quite sure what genre I wanted to go in. And visual arts was always really strong part of my life.
But it was filmmaking, when you say that you wanted to prove that you could have a career.
It was all filmmaking. So all of these courses, so I did, so at college, I did a HND in media production. Mm-hmm. At Salford University, I did a HND in media production. Mm-hmm. Then came to Wolverhampton, did a degree in electronic media. Okay. And then progressed on to the master's. But yeah, the turning point for me, because obviously when you're doing all these courses, you're trying out lots of different genres. Mm. But the turning point for me was going to Wolverhampton University, where I had the opportunity to work with 16mm film. Mm. And they had all the original 16mm cutting rooms, projectors, Steinbecks. And it was just, and also a dark room. So I excelled in very kind of hands-on working with materials. Mm. I excelled in that area rather than the going out and filming. At those days was VHS and pneumatic editing. And wasn't really something I wanted to get into. I liked the fact that I could edit by hand. Mm. I could splice film together. I was developing film. I was filming on film. Yeah. I was drawing on film.
Do you like the tactility?
Yeah, I was animating on film. So from there, I then studied a master's in movement on film, which has now culminated in me being a producer and director in screen dance.
Mm-hmm. And what is screen dance?
Screen dance is where film and dance merge together. It's a hybrid of the two coming together. So it's a highly cinematic art form. Dancers tell your narrative. So mm-hmm. it's as simple as that, really. It uses all the same principles as a film production, but the main element of what you're trying to express visually is through choreography and dance. It's seen as an art form, as an arts practice, but you will find that, you know, in making these sorts of films, it is essentially film. In making the films, you still use the same level as crew as you would a short drama.
Right, right.
Or documentary. So it's just as high production values as any other film genre.
And what are you producing them with the goal of? Are they going out as like films to be exhibited? Are they kind of pieces for, say, charities or other organisations?
I have worked with a dance company called Freefall Dance Company in association with Birmingham Royal Ballet for the past 8 years.
Okay.
And I've made a trilogy of dance films with them. And so the idea of these dance films is that they get distributed to dance film festivals across the world.
Mm.
Yeah, so they tour in that manner, really. They get shown as one-offs in festivals, such as that Film Festival, mm-hmm. as well. The main distribution of these sort of films are places like BBC Arts or Sky Arts, mm-hmm. or Channel 4 Random Acts and screen dance festivals and experimental film festivals. So it's seen as an experimental film form, really.
Yeah. And do you see it as experimental? Yeah. Or is that just kind of what it's classed as in the wider spectrum?
I think in when you think of film, you know, screen dance, because it doesn't have the kind of formulas what you would see in documentary or drama, it is seen as experimental. But actually, I think there's such a growing interest in the form now, and a lot of directors are wanting to understand how to visually tell a story through movement, because I think now you see everywhere, particularly within commercials and also the corporate industry, but broadcasts now are really picking up on the fact that dance, movement, telling stories emotively without words is really strong and has a real impact. Mm. And I think, you know, when I describe screen dance to people, I just say, well, how many Oscars did La La Land win? And why do you think it won it? You know, it wasn't, of course, Ryan Gosling's in it or whatever. But what was he doing? You know, what was different about it? It's seen as a language along with any other film language now. Yeah. And then,
or even in like the 1930s when musicals were in their heyday, and there was this censorship law called the Hays Code, where there were certain things that they couldn't say or do because of, like, it was deemed too sexual, or it was deemed like just not in accord with the moral codes of the time. So they use dance and movement to communicate those different things. And it is amazing what can be said through that kind of medium.
if you look at now all the numerous drama series that are out, you know, just the one thing that strikes me in my head is Handmaid's Tale and how choreographic it is. And so I think, I feel like it's now been recognised as a film genre that is really growing, and it's really cinematic and inspiring to work in that way.
Has that recognition been a struggle? Like, have you felt yourself kind of having to explain your career or like what you do to people, and now it's finally kind of making its way into the mainstream?
Yeah, I'll still always be classed as a visual artist. And I think because you don't see screen dance in broadcast very much, I still having to like really describe what it is, you know, what it is.
Yeah.
And the major sticking point with it is that, you know, film funders don't fund screen dance,
right,
and arts funders do. But if you bring them both together, you'll find film funders will fund the production side, and the arts funders will fund the dance side.
Right.
So there's still a lot of kind of sticking points as to like, where does the money come from? Who is your real audience?
Yeah.
Where is it really going to be seen? And like, and why are you doing it? You know, so there's still a lot of convincing, really. Well, not convincing, but just a lot of profiling that needs to happen. But I feel like it is, you know, really growing. I've had a flourishing career as a screen dance maker.
So is that, is the money coming from funders that you're then having to apply for, funding for?
Yeah, so I apply, so I make about one screen dance film every 1.5 years, because it usually takes that long to get the drawdown of funding. And also, it takes just as long to create the idea and execute it properly. My main work works with disabilities and looks at the representation of disability on screen. So it's a very kind of long process in creating that work. It's mainly funded by Arts Council or dance councils. Film councils do recognise it. The British Council, the Film Council, BFI are now starting to. I was funded to make a short drama about a dancer, which included a lot of dance in it from Creative England. So that, you know, there's ways and means of kind of bringing movement into your work. And then amongst, I guess that's one thing that I do. And then as a kind of back offshoot of that, I'm an independent filmmaker, film director, who works in artistic filmmaking. So I apply all the sensibilities of screen dance to promotional film and commercial film, and also corporate film, and also just general kind of independent sort of commissions that I'll get. So that's my main bread and butter, I'd say.
And with the dance film, how are you coming up with ideas, and what does the production process look like for you?
So with the ideas, it's usually, because I do kind of at the moment, I am very much focused in disability, I'm also really focused in history and heritage, and living in Birmingham, there's so much around. So, and that's another strand to my bow, is that I do a lot of heritage lottery funded projects using films. I'm excited about women's stories and the suffrage of women. So at the moment, I've got two projects that are in development, and those are ones that's just got funded, which is great, from Dance of Birmingham, which is looking at profiling a story of three very visually impaired dancers. And that's going to be a short of 3 minutes, very, very short film. And the second film, I'm looking to pitch to broadcast Sky Arts and Channel 4 and people like that, which is looking at the modern day suffrage of women today. And that's called We Are Not Strangers. So there's two in development at the moment, one in production at the moment, one in development. But it's still the same process, as you have to write your treatment, you have to pitch the idea, you have to sell it to a certain extent, you have to say who your audience is, where it's going to go, why it's important, all of those things really. So the process of the film, of making these screen dance films, how this story is storyboarded through looking at visual movements, first of all, lots of rehearsals, lots of observations of how people move. We'll then get the crew together, which will be DOP, camera assist, lighting designer, director, producer, gaffer, and then obviously the dancers, choreographer and director of the choreography. So it's kind of a few extra people as part of the team, really, as you'd normally have in other sort of broadcast genres. And then we'll shoot it, probably take about 2 days, And then we go through the edit process. But the edit process is really different because you're kind of, you start to tell the story through the edit. Because you have the layer of choreography, which is what you see when you film it. But then always in your mind, you're knowing you're going to choreograph that again within the edit. So that's where the creativity really comes through again. And then we'll have a sound artist who will then be working throughout the whole process to be always looking at sound and how the sound then can also be choreographed in the edit.
And then what's it like seeing it with an audience or, having it programmed somewhere? Is that always like an exciting step for you?
Yeah, you always have to really sell the concept of the film and it gets scrutinized, well, or viewed by lots of different people. So critique, I'm going to say, not scrutinized. So it's, with Screen Dance, it's critiqued not only by filmmakers and film critics, but it's also critiqued by dancers and choreographers. So you've got that other layer as well. So you're constantly thinking to yourself, have we shot the movement in its best way that it could be? It is exciting to show the work, but because it's still an evolving genre, it's always kind of critiqued by lots of different hats. And you're still having to really prove and showcase the best work that you can.
Yeah. So. And why is it important for you to tell a story in this medium? And do you see it as particularly freeing, or what draws you to it?
Right. So, I started off as a dancer, as an Indian classical dancer, and for many, many years. I mean, I did it up until I was 22, as well as doing all my studying. And it was something that my parents, because from an Indian background, it was a heavily influential thing culturally. And I did absolutely love it. Just from that background, I think being visually, colour, visuals, movement, storytelling has very much been part of my practice, part of my filmmaking. And so after studying, I could have gone two ways. I could have said to myself, now you need to get a route into broadcast. But I kept saying to myself, being from a dancer background and having that originality was something I really wanted to pursue a bit more. And so film and dance, how could you bring those two things together? So I kind of wanted to go off and explore that a bit further.
Why through dance?
Why through dance?
Yeah, like why do you feel like that's the best way for you to tell these stories?
Well, the people that I pitch to usually are people that are offering funding for a screen dance film in the first place. So I don't have to kind of
spell it out for them.
Don't have to do it. But I think it always comes down to the story. So it's always, yes, you're using dance, but what's your story? You know, why is that important? And I just find that you just have a real emotional quality with movement. And I'm not a drama filmmaker. I've tried it. I wasn't very good at it. I mean, it was good to try it out and to see if I could, move that discipline to a different type of way of working. But I think dance for me, a visual aesthetic that I understand really well. I can see when I watch anybody dance or move, I can see what they're trying to say with that movement, in particularly when it comes to disabilities. It opens my eyes always when I see somebody who's profoundly blind or blind and deaf, that they express and communicate themselves in a completely different way, using completely different senses. And I always feel that capturing that on film and sharing that to mainstream audiences is what should be happening today. And so that's what I'm always trying to push. And I know that, the one argument I always get is, yes, you've just filmed a visually impaired dancer. How are they going to watch the film? And that's another research and development process I'm going through at the moment, and finding ways of using technology so different audiences who use different senses and can experience the screen-based work.
And what are your hours like? How do you work? Do you work out of an office, or are you working from home? Like, talk a bit about the logistical side of it.
So for when I first started out as an independent filmmaker, so self-employed, and worked from home, the usual thing, and then kind of moved into an office, a shared office with another filmmaker, Had that for about 8 years, and that was great. And it was in the Jura Quarter, and it felt like it was, I was very much around the creative hub of the Midlands. But it kind of, because then the limitations of having an office far away from home, I felt like I just needed to have access all the time, 24/7, because I'm a sort of person who doesn't have real times, or I'm going to work in the morning or afternoon or evening. It can be at any time, really. Yeah. It's such a creative medium that I'm being a true artist now. Creativity can come to you at any time. So I kind of ditched the office. And then also, I've now got a daughter. She's 3.5. And so I've relocated my office to my home, where I have a dedicated studio with all of my kit. So that kind of works out really well for me, because it works in tandem with family life. So kind of work and life and family were all under one roof, which is just the way it really works for me.
So
that's my setup at the moment.
How has that changed your approach or your process at all? Like, having to obviously spend a lot of time, it's a full-time job, that in and of itself, and then filmmaking on top of it.
Yeah, it's been really difficult. I've got to say that when I had my daughter, I guess I was a little bit naive. I mean, I'm an independent filmmaker, so you don't get, you know, if you're in broadcast, you don't get maternity leave, you don't get time off, you don't get, you know, once you come back from your maternity leave, you've got your salary every month coming in, because that's, you're going back to work. That's not how it works independently. You're constantly looking for your next commission, your next project, your next funding, your next this, that and the other. And you're always thinking a year in advance or 6 months in advance. When I had my daughter, I was still working. I was 2 weeks over my pregnancy. She hadn't come out yet.
Oh, wow.
I was still working 2 weeks later. I was still screening work. Yeah. I was still going and making connections. Massive that I was. I still had to keep that going. I took 6 weeks off and only 6 weeks off. But in those 6 weeks, a lot of my other work, I guess my bread and butter money, clients, all went. They all disappeared, because... Okay. In that time, I guess 6 to 8 weeks I took off. In that time, I'd say that, you know, those clients knew that I'd be taking some time off. Mm. And so a lot of people kind of jumped on those clients knowing that I'd also take that time off. And so I lost a lot of work.
So did you have to then build up those?
I had to build it all back up again. And it was incredibly, it took a year, and it was incredibly, it knocked me, I think, you know, because, I mean, what was really great is I had a showcase with Flatpak Film Festival, and I ran quite a big programme for Flatpak Film Festival. And so I had to just change my trajectory in work and realise that, you know, it can be a bit of a fickle industry. And, you know, if you do take any time off as a woman with a kid, let me just say, there was a lot of filmmakers hovering on the fringes, almost waiting for me to kind of disappear for a little short time. So that did happen, but it kind of spurred me on to kind of say, well, you know, really look at my skill set and say to myself, well, I'm really good at making those contacts in the first place. I'm very good at getting the clients, and I'm good at delivering. You have to maybe really change your trajectory and say to yourself, what is it that you're really skilled at? And she's 3.5 years old now. She's now got to a point where things are absolutely really flourishing in that road, down that road. So it was a good time for me to really reflect and take, you know, just have a think about what it is that I really need to be doing, because working on a client by client base way is unsteady, is too fractured, and, you know, it's a fickle industry as well. So, you know, if you change your track and focus on what is really your uniqueness as a filmmaker, then, and grow that and build it, then that's kind of what I had to do.
And obviously, being an independent filmmaker, it's not on a permanent contract basis. You're generating your own work and ideas, I'm assuming. So then what are you kind of doing in the downtime, and how are you staying motivated? Are you like constantly thinking of ideas and thinking of the next project, or are you like taking some time out to debrief? Like, how does that work?
I think I'm constantly thinking of the next project all the time. I mean, at the moment, I'd say I'm in a privileged position where I can be funded by the film industry, but also the arts industry. So, you know, I'm putting plans together for the next 3 years to see if this screen dance work can be a continually funded strand to my work. And so, yeah, I think once you're a mom and you've got a kid, you kind of don't have any time downtime to yourself. Yeah. And the pressures of just responsibility of being able to provide is always there. And the makeup for me now is that I'm the main provider, and my husband is, I guess, half provider, half carer,
mm-hmm.
because the hours in film are really long, and you're not, you know, you might be on 8-hour shoots, but then the editing time is there, and the invoicing and admin and all of those different layers are on top. Yeah. So I'm pretty much always working and always busy. The key things that I kind of missed out on when I had my daughter was I wasn't really able to network, wasn't able to go to any training or go to any screenings, or, you know, and that's where you build up your contacts and your networks. Mm. I wasn't networking at all for the first 2.5 years. I just wasn't able to. I had a daughter, you know, you can't really do that, you know. Now that she's at an age where she can be left with, I guess, sitters, babysitters and people like that, I'm now able to do that. So I guess it's a constant thing. But I feel that now, after 3 years, I'm able to do what I used to do before she was born, which is quite a big gap.
And kind of who takes care of you, in the sense that do you have like a guild or somewhere that you can go to for advice, or who's like your HR person when you're an independent filmmaker? You.
Yeah, do you know what? There really isn't. I mean, the Screen Central that's in the Midlands, and I'm on the board of Screen Central, and I have to say that is an organisation where I feel like I'm part of the network, and that's really, really important. And I joined the board of Screen Central when I was pregnant, and just thought to myself, well, you know, is this something that you really, really should be doing? But I think that's so important, that if you can join a board. I'm also on the board of a dance company who are constantly, you know, on the rise of making really dynamic work. And I think you learn so much when you're part of a board or part of a network like that. In terms of taking care of me, I take care of myself really most of the time, but I do try to network with people as much as I can. It's my crew, really. They're the people that I'm able to talk to, and I use the same crew for every shoot. I sometimes diversify it and work with new people, but it's nice to be able to have that crew that I can always ask for advice, or, you know, to chat about well-being, you know, and also, you know, being a mum, because there's a lot of men in the industry that have children, and it's good just to be able to talk about, you know, how tough it can be sometimes with your time.
And what are your ambitions as a filmmaker? Where do you see your career going from this point onwards?
I think I'd like to form a company where I'm not independent anymore. You know, I'm still effectively self-employed because I subcontract, but I'm wanting to form a company that has its own board in itself. And it's quite different for me, because, you know, when I'm talking more as in an arts company, but I guess that's where I'd like to head. So it's a lot more sustaining in that way. I'll be able to get more funding, be able to apply for different pots of funding by forming that company. So I'm kind of on the cusp of doing that now.
And what's the hardest part of the job?
The hardest part of the job is finding your commissions, really, and being the go-to person. So it's always building up those partnerships and relationships with people. I'm doing that in the corporate world at the moment, and that's thankfully going really well.
Can you talk a bit about the corporate filmmaking world? Because that's not something I've ever had a discussion of before.
I think, no, so like corporate at the moment are utilising film like they've never utilised it before, because, you know, they know that their products are going to sell through film. It is, digital marketing is top of the list. It wasn't many, many years ago, and it was really hard. You had to be a fully fledged production company to be able to do that sort of work, you know, make adverts for them or testimonials or whatever. But I think now in the corporate world, because digital marketing is always a strand as part of their company, as a filmmaker, you can really tap into that. Most of the stuff that I do, which is digital marketing, testimonials, short stories in film, is for the arts sector. So I very much kind of will profile more or less most of the arts festivals and people making it and documentation of projects and stuff. I kind of do a lot of that, loads of that sort of work. And I don't really use kind of dance a lot in the corporate world, but I'll use a camera that moves. So when I say I work with movement, it's not always with a dancer. It's it can also be being able to tell a story with a person, with an actor. He may not be saying very much, but he's doing a lot of walking and talking, or, you know, I storyboard things in a way that movement gives you the emotive value, the same emotional value as somebody who tells you that.
And what's the biggest career lesson you've learned?
You always need a signature project. Always keep on making your own work as well as working for clients. Don't let that side of your work dissipate. Don't let the fact that, oh, I've not got any money to do that, but I've just landed this really big job with this company. You have to keep your own creative skills going all the time. And you can only do that if you're doing your own project. So that's why I always try to do at least one screen dance project every 1.5 years that isn't very well paid, but creatively it pushes every value that I have and every skill that I have, and it then informs all the other work that I do.
And then finally, is there a film by a woman director, perhaps one that uses dance in an interesting way, that you've seen that you think is undervalued?
I was heavily influenced by director Satyajit Ray, 1930s, 40s. And his poetic way of telling the story. Mm. That's an older director, I guess.
No, but yeah, a lot of his films get rescreened in my repertoire.
His films do get rescreened. I think it was when I saw his work that I felt that as an Indian woman, I was able to do the same. Mm. Because around me, I really wasn't seeing work made by female women of colour, I guess. You know, obviously there are Bend It Like Beckham and things like that, but that was drama. Mm. But when I saw that work, and I think I saw it when, you know, very later on in my youth, I must have been like in my early 20s, when I saw his work, I was like, wow, that really was a game changer for me. Yeah, it changed everything. It changed my whole direction in film when I saw his work.
Yeah, I think it's on BFI Player. I think there's places that you can kind of still catch it. Seema, thank you so much. This has been great and really insightful. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. It was quite a divergence from the type of guest I've interviewed before, but I really appreciated that perspective, and I think Seema is testament to the fact that you can make and screen your work even if it doesn't fit neatly into a category or operates outside the mainstream. As ever, please spread the word about Best Girl Grip if you like what you hear, and any good vibes, tweets or reviews that you can throw my way are ever appreciated. I recently discovered I have 5 stars on iTunes, so keep the love coming. You can follow me on Twitter @StoneColdFox, cold with an E. Thanks for listening.